Welcome to the Blockchain Practitioners Podcast, where we interview founders, leaders, professors, and experts in the blockchain industry about the projects they are working on. On this podcast, we try to learn something new about an industry which will, in a few years, affect the lives of us all. My name is Steven, and I'm your host for this episode. Suman Ganuganti is the co-founder and CEO of Personal.ai, a digital version of your mind. Previous to Personal.ai, Suman also founded Aeratech, recognized as one of Time Magazine's best inventions and Fast Company's world-changing ideas, where he scaled AI and AR technology to assist the blind and low-vision community. He's been featured on CNN, The New York Times, CNBC, and Forbes. Suman holds his bachelor's degree in engineering, master's in robotics, and an MBA in entrepreneurship. He also has 10 patents in emerging technologies as well. He loves exploring the creative potential of AI in Web3, and he is here to update us on the progress Personal.ai made since we last interviewed him in the summer of 2022. Hi, Suman. Welcome back, man. It's been a while. How have you been?
Good, Steve. Thanks a lot for talking to me again. And it's always a pleasure having a conversation with you. I always enjoy it.
Yeah, me too. You and I spoke some time ago, and a lot has happened since. So maybe just give a general idea of what the company was and what the company is doing, and then the progress that you guys made up until today. I guess there's a lot to talk about, so go ahead.
So I believe we spoke like almost 6 months ago, and we talked a lot about AI, personal AI, the data ownership. We did, you know, mention about the potential use cases. So as you know, some of your listeners may have heard, back when I spoke to you, we were, you know, talking to like a few people who are working with us on a beta product to kind of, you know, experiment, try different things in the use cases. And the general premise was, okay, hang on, this is a generative model that is trained on my individual data. How can I use it for my own benefit? Can it generate, you know, for content, or can it generate for my own like recall mechanisms within my own data? So we were like experimenting with around like 12 to 13 different use cases. And we had the, you know, chat interface, if you remember, where you can essentially talk to your AI. So I think August we went like public beta, and in November ChatGPT happened. And since ChatGPT happened, I think there is generally like a lot more awareness on AI and how to technically communicate with the AI. The two key differences that I will mention, Stephen, and then, you know, I will open up for questions like how you wanna have this conversation, is that generally, one of the key insights turned out that personal AI is more valuable, more beneficial when you are recalling and restoring from personal data or private data. Because if the information is already in the public corpus, it's already indexed by large language models. And the second thing is, we found ourselves identifying our core moat from these experiments, which is core to our thesis of personal AI, is how do we reduce or increase the access of communication amongst people. And if you do remember, I don't know if I mentioned it in the last podcast, the story of like, what would Larry do, right? So given where we are right now, we are doubling down on giving a personal AI for every person for free in a messaging application or a chat applications, where you can communicate with people, with each other, you know, very similar to an iMessage or a WhatsApp or a Snapchat, but except on personal AI messaging application, you would be training your own AI. So everything that you say to your AI, or everything that you say to any other person that you're chatting, will be remembered, and it will be used to suggest draft responses for you on the incoming messages from your own mind in the true authentic manner, all the attributes that personal AI model or personal language model is made of. So that is what we have released. Depending on when this airs, you know, people can either join the waitlist or people can actually go download the app, which is mobile experience and our desktop experience. And it will look and feel like any other messaging applications, but the beauty of your AI alongside with you in a co-pilot mode or an autopilot mode at your fingertips.
Okay, wow. That's a big step from where we spoke last time, because I joined the program, as you know, and I got stuck a bit with training the AI, because you have to have a lot of content that you can feed it to. And training the model isn't or wasn't at that time. How do you say that? You had to actually make an effort to provide the content. While it seems now with the app that, you know, it'll gather more data the more that you use it, without, you know, having to provide it with specific content. So,
yeah.
Is that how that works? Is it easier now to train your AI?
Yeah, it's easier now to train the AI, but you also have a reason, right? I think you had a perfect example as well, because the primary use case for you is probably like the content generation aspect of it, right? Like, because you know, you're a podcaster and you put out the data, and there were a couple of issues that we identified. One, you know, this idea of like coming to the platform and then pushing out the data was a little bit, you know, barrier heavy and challenging. It's like, okay, how do I organize this data? How do I push it? What kind of data I need to push? So there was a little bit of discovery. And by the way, thanks a lot, because there was a process we went through to land where we are today. And even the content generation idea was more applicable use case for large language models, because as much as people has a good tendency at this idea of like, I want to generate my own personal data, the feedback was they still want like the novelty and the newness of like, you know, large language models. Mm-hmm. Now we have this, idea of like sensitivity, like how much do you want it to be, you know, completely generated from your own personal AI versus other, but more importantly, we are focusing on one use case, which is, you know, augmenting your conversations on a day-to-day basis with this, because it is continuously remembering what you're saying, what you're doing, and trying to replicate your mind, but it is right at your fingertips. To be able to generate these responses for you, right? So that's kind of like how we, streamlined how this experience is going to be.
Okay. So, I know that people who are listening now will probably wonder, like, what is the difference between OpenAI's chat version on the phone and, for example, you know, the suggestions that you get while you're typing your text messages. So what would be the big difference there?
I think it's about 80 degree different. OpenAI, ChatGPT, it's, you know, essentially like a large language model from Internet of Data, right? So it's great for fast tracking how you synthesize and how you grab the data and how you understand the data that you are probably seeking from the internet, like, you know, in the traditional methods you would search, you would have 10 different links and you're probably researching and searching. But now, you know, you're having sort of like a human-like experience conversation where an AI is making the job of synthesizing all that information for you and getting it to the point much faster. However, you know, personal AI, as it sounds, as you know, it's entirely personal data. So meaning, the generations that are happening is coming from your knowledge. The style of writing that is happening is how you talk and how you write and how you express things. And it is also yours, right? You are at the core figuring out or establishing what kind of information that I want my AI to learn and what not. You know, you may choose to have your AI learn about your childhood, maybe not, right? So it's your control. So personal AI is, you know, of course, like the unique model. The beauty is, though, because of ChatGPT and the awareness and the understanding of AI has become, you know, so prominent that people actually believe and try and get creative on how, you know, you can use your own personal AI model, which is, yeah, all the similar prompts. The prompt engineering is a thing now. But in our case, we have hundreds and thousands and millions of models. In the case of ChatGPT OpenAI, it's a one humongous model that is aggregation of all data. So I think that difference is pretty clear. At least people understand and seem to have general awareness around it. In our case, is okay, you can have like a preset suggestions from your iMessage, such as thank you or sorry, I will talk later. It's a canned set of responses. But it's not the entirety of your, you know, own mind, right? So if you send me an information about Hisman, you know, I'm coming back from, you know, so-and-so date and to so-and-so place and somebody else like asked you the same question, your AI knows that information already. It will automatically construct the response for you. So those suggestions are not smart enough to understand who you are to generate responses for every individual incoming receiving message that you're getting. So it's much more sophisticated in terms of your personal AI versus, you know, a preset canned responses of thank you and I'll see you later.
Okay. Yeah. So beyond constructing texts or responses in your own voice and with the all, you know, the thought process that you learned your AI, are there other things that the app that you're releasing is going to be able to do, or are you really focusing in on the text and the tone of voice and so on?
Yeah, so we are focusing on the text messaging, but however, if you think about the communication on day to day, you know, we normally tend to send messages to ourselves, right? If you are reflecting on yourselves, you can think about chatting with your AI by yourself. You can still be you know, asking it to generate stuff for your own purpose or recursive for your own purpose. We would eventually be releasing something called a you know, personal AI keyboard that you could, you know, leverage for other messaging applications as well. So at the core, your personal AI can do many different things. We are doubling down on the core experience and the use case of, you know, communicating between people and creating a messaging interface that everybody normally understands, and kind of almost put the complicated idea of training your AI behind the scenes, right? So we basically smoothen all that experience. By doing so, I think, you know, you are now talking an experience, you know, like a Snapchat or a WhatsApp, but with your personal AI integrated into your daily life.
Okay. Now, last time we also talked about privacy and ownership. I assume that you are still using blockchain technology.
Yes. We are still using blockchain technology. In fact, we are migrating. If you do remember, we always has been partners of Oasis Labs for the past 2 to 3 years. And I think now we have like a lot of conversations that are happening in this core idea of AI in Web3. And that was our topic, if you remember. You know, we were talking about like, what does AI mean and what does Web3 mean? And it was all about data ownership, and AI is all about data. So it's a natural convergence from our perspective, but there's obviously like a contention around acceptance, you know, almost 1 year ago about AI in Web3, but now it's much more widely accepted, which is great news. So so we are migrating from like Oasis Labs parcel API, which was more around decentralized identity, to something called a Sapphire API, which actually has economics and associated tokens on the chain as well. So we have some migration work to do, but at the end of the day, yes, we are still using blockchain for, you know, giving the guarantee of the data to the user and the models that they own. And all the bells and whistles that we envisioned before is now a reality, because now people actually do have their personal AIs and knows how to leverage that in their day-to-day life.
I'm thinking about diving a little bit deeper into the blockchain part, if you don't mind.
Yeah, sure, go for it.
So how will the data be stored, or how do you connect the personal information to a blockchain to secure it?
Yeah, so the experience is the following, and it's slightly different from what it was almost 1 year ago. And the slight difference is, you know, the decentralized identity and the core idea was fascinating and was clear. We implemented it and we made it super easy and super useful, but it is still a lot more barrier heavy for a normal consumer and everyday people. Especially our core target is not a business, not a corporate. It's actually everyday consumers and everyday people. So for them to understand like, the blockchain and create an idea on Oasis Labs was still a little bit, you know, not known, like not a regular practice that people do day to day. So as of today, we have switched the initial experience to what people are normally used to, you know, which is signing up with a username and password, or signing up with a social login or a Google login. You would get into your personal AI, or you basically simply scan a QR code with your phone number if you're using the mobile app, you know, similar to any other messaging apps. Once you do are inside the app and inside the product and you're building your stack, now you have a choice. You have a choice to say, hey, the data is yours, but if you do want to transfer or actually establish an ownership of your data on-chain or on the record, then you would need to connect your wallet. When you connect your wallet, essentially all the access to the memory stack data will be associated with your keys. And Oasis Labs maintain that trust for you, and they will be doing the process of who is and what is accessing what data at what point. And all the personal AI systems would essentially be relying on the client, which is a mobile phone or, you know, your computer passing in the access to our systems to crunch the model for you. So I think the basics are the same. The implementation is subtly different. The experience is subtly different. To one, create an amazing UX. To two, eliminate the barriers. And then three, make it a choice because people like choices. And some people understand blockchain, some people don't understand blockchain. It's merely a technology. It's very similar to like a two-factor authentication, right? Some people like earlier of two-factor authentication, I don't care about two-factor. Some people like, oh, yes, you know, I understand because it lives on my device. And hey, you know what, my device, if I lose my device, it's only when I compromise my security and privacy. So yeah, so that's kind of the implementation that we have going on right now.
So the you can choose to connect your wallet, use the blockchain. Does that mean that if you or a company or anybody else wants to access your data, that they have to pass through you and use your wallet? Or how does that work? So how does the ownership with the blockchain, how's that organized? Because what is actually on the blockchain and what is readily available for companies and for your company, for personal AI, to interact with and use, and where do you guys draw the line and why?
Yeah, so the data is off the chain. The key that governs the access to the data is on the chain, right? And that's how Oasis Labs has designed their systems. And I think it's a good balance between the performance and the privacy that, you know, the technology can allow us to do. In the current state of art, you know, you may still have the keys, encryption keys to decrypt, but it's still stored somewhere on, you know, the servers that somebody has access to, right? But in the case of, you know, blockchain, as we know, it's very hard to, you know, keep track of where the data is. So even if it is custodian wallet or non-custodian wallet, and Oasis Labs is a custodian wallet, and they will ensure how the access controls are established between personal AI and between the user. So it's almost like a third party, right? They are governing the access. So if a user indeed wants to not continue their models to be crunched, they can, you know, simply use their, you know, Oasis Labs account to remove the access control or the list of the rule that allows personal AI to access the data in the first place. So that is the architecture on how Oasis Labs and the Sapphire kind of works. And in fact, they recently put out a blog post on the architecture itself. So if you're interested, you can include, you know, in your podcast on how Sapphire actually works.
Great. We'll put a link.
They also are pushing a lot on AI companies and the protection of the data privacy of the data. And the cool thing is we've been working with them for almost two and a half years now. So we've seen even their versions, I guess, mature on how a consumer company like ours can create super amazing experience or a barrier-free experience, but still use the blockchain behind the scenes.
Yes, it's a smart way to use the blockchain, but, you know, just circumvent the problem.
The interesting thing is, you know, as we know, the previous version of blockchain, it always started with like token first, right? And we took an approach of, you know, privacy first when it comes down to blockchain as a use case and an application. Because for us, privacy was the first most important thing as a personal AI company that actually truly believes that everybody should own their own data. The industry was a little bit against the idea of using blockchain for privacy because, yeah, sure, there is a monetization component to it, which was secondary for us. In other words, yes, you can still like monetize your own AI, your own personal AI, and all those concepts still exist. But we didn't want to compromise or start with the core thesis of the token first, but the core thesis for us is privacy first. Because we are a utility-focused consumer AI company, which is what it is today, even like right now. And I think there is a general shift in the macro that is happening on AI centered around, you know, creating utility even within the crypto industry, in the Web3 industry. And I think we are, in a way, perfectly positioned for that. And seen through the variations of, you know, how things have changed or evolved over a period of time, you know, through our partnership with Oasis.
So you've already touched on how OpenAI just, you know, blew every other topic out of the water, and AI is now getting a lot of attention. How did you guys experience that? How are you guys riding the AI wave now? Do you feel it, or how's that been for you guys?
I think the awareness is great, right? And the awareness is great. And yes, we are indeed like riding the AI wave, but the thing is, we are not the kid around the corner, right? Because we've been pushing this concept of personal AI for 3 years and developing personal language models. And now OpenAI has been so amazing in terms of creating general awareness around the consumer products. And the next immediate shift is, okay, how do I personalize, how do I put AI to my use, right? Because, you know, that's where the true consumer benefit is, and that's where we come into play. So the industry is still very much focused on large language models, but the believability and the awareness of what actually AI can do and the utility that is associated with it is there now. So it's our time. Like, it's our time to put all the work that we've been using for, you know, bringing AI to everyday consumer, make it a reality. And that's exactly what we are doing right now. So everybody should start creating their own personal AI. And we also like remove the barriers that we had before the, you know, financial side of things. Like last year, the subscriptions, no, it just start going and create your own personal AI. It is yours. You still own the data. You still own the models. And then, yeah, as you increase the use of the AI and the utility and the value for the community, for organizations, for, you know, teams, for companies, then there is a business associated with it. But the core principles are the same. The timing is right. We have the technology. We are not dependent on OpenAI, where every other AI startup company is likely dependent on OpenAI. And guess what? These personal language models scale horizontally. They run on your phone eventually. I can't wait for those milestones to be coming along. So I'm happy whatever is happening out there in the macro industry, and I think we are positioned perfectly. And we believe large language models solve a certain set of use cases out there, and personal language models has a different set of use cases that is more closer to the individuals and how we solve the problems of, you know, your data and your communication needs and your conversations, your augmentation.
And that's where our minds are all the time. And we will continue to push for, you know, until everybody has their own personal in their pocket.
Yeah, you mentioned you guys have a shift now in the economic model, right? So how are you now going to monetize?
We are not going to compromise on the data. That's like no go. It's principally against the company. We want people to own the data and they control it. So it is still a very straightforward, simple subscription model based on how much AI value that you are gaining. For consumers, though, we want to make it free as much as possible for everyday personal use, for everyday data use. And eventually, there will be, you know, creators, influencers, communities, you know, high knowledge-oriented knowledge creators. They're all the people where they have specific needs to monetize their own AI. And, by, you know, if anybody is creating monetary value with their own AI, then yes, there is a monetary value back to the company, you know, the founding company. So it's a simple subscription model. Everybody starts for free and you will get certain amounts of AI. The human-to-human communication is free. Training is free. But as you use more of the AI, then it goes into the subscription tiers for people, right? So technically, it doesn't cost a dime to, you know, train. And when the situation arises in the team setting or in the community setting, in the business setting, then yeah, then there will be cost associated with it.
Okay. Yeah, that's clear.
Yeah.
So let's just wrap up, and maybe you can tell people how they can get started now to use AI in their personal lives, especially with your product.
Yeah, assuming this will be aired sometime like late in March or even April, technically you can go to personal.ai and sign up for a free personal AI account, either download the mobile app or desktop app, and invite people, friends, create groups, chat with yourself, and everything that you create, send to anybody will be part of your AI that is continuously learning. And yeah, have fun with it, because as you start having more conversations, your AI will be subtle enough to nicely provide suggestion in your own time. And that is the magic moment that people are having in some beta experiences that I see. It's like, holy shit, like, this talks like me now. Yeah, of course it knows about my information, right? And then boom, you swipe right to send it. So that's the experience we want to give to people, and then, you know, never lose a moment. And in fact, when your tagline is like, live your moment, right? If you express yourself continuously and you have something that is continuously learning that belongs to you and of yours, heck yeah, it's almost like having my second self that I could trust, and it's working for me in various different places. Yeah, so that's my, you know, I guess, call to action. Get your personal AI. Take control of your life.
All right, everybody, get your own personal AI at personal.ai. Thank you so much, Suman, for talking again. I hope that we can just, in 6 months or in a year's time, we can just do exactly the same, and you'll have some other great updates for us. Thank you so much for your time, and I hope to see you soon.
All right, sounds good, Suman. Thank you. Bye.
Bye. Thank you for listening to the Blockchain Practitioners podcast, and we hope you learned something useful and new about blockchain and digital currency today. If you are involved in an interesting blockchain project and would like to talk about it in a similar fashion to this episode you just listened to, feel free to reach out to us. Also, please like, rate, and review this podcast, and share our content with everyone you think would like it. If you'd like some more information on this project, you can always visit us on LinkedIn or our website at blockchainpractitioners.com. Thanks again for listening, and see you at the next episode.